Good afternoon, all. Early afternoon. So I'd like to visit revisit a theme. It was actually a theme in the first shmuz I ever gave in the yeshiva. From Parshas Kedoshim, we read last week. And the question really about Judaism defines holiness, living a holy life. Years ago I heard of Noach Weinberg Zatzal speaking, and that was an example he gave of a word that you shouldn't let people pass over on you, meaning do this. Why? Because it'll make you holy. Okay. What's that? Right? What's holiness? How do we define it? And it comes to the forefront, especially because in that parsha we read, Kedoshim Tiyu, it comes as an imperative. It comes as a command. Kedoshim Tiyu, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Right? Which is also mysterious, how that continuation of the pasuk, be Kadosh because I am Kadosh, I Hashem your God, am Kadosh. Right? What does that help us? We're not God. Right? What goes on there? So, in the couple of the Rishonim, you have famous approaches to explaining what you do, what the action item is that comes from Kedoshim Tiyu. Rashi says it refers to separating from Arayos and Avera, meaning from all things that we're not supposed to do, and especially from forbidden relations. Because when you separate from them, he says, when you find the Geder Erava, when you find the fence against forbidden relations, so you find Kedusha. Kedusha is there. So that's tricky to figure out. In other words, we can view, say, forbidden relations as a negative. We create a fence to protect ourselves from that. Why does that bring Kedusha? Kedusha seems to be a positive force. Right? Why is it suddenly there just because we've eliminated a negative force? Okay, the Ramban explains it differently. He says that it comes to close up a famous loophole that could exist in the Torah, which is called Novel Birshus HaTorah, to live a disgusting life halachically. Right? If a person wants to really try to play around and go, especially if you're looking at the basic requirements from the Torah. So the example he gives, a person can marry many wives, right? You marry 50 wives, and you spend your day grilling up steaks and drinking wine, and someone comes and says, aren't you a religious Jew? He says, of course. Look in my living room, 50 ksuvas on the wall. All those wives I married halachically. The meat is glad kosher, the wine has six hashgachas on the back of the bottle, let the good times roll. Okay, so therefore he says, Kedoshim Tiyu gives you this imperative of Kadesh Atzmecha B'Mutar Lach. Make yourself holy even with those things that are allowed to you. But a person again can ask, why? Why does cutting back make me holy? Is it because I'm torturing myself? Is it the idea, is this something which we didn't associate with Judaism, that self-inflicted suffering makes you holy? Right here, there's something I'm allowed to do. It's kosher. Well, even though you can cut back on it, so you'll be holy. Cutting back makes you holy. Kind of like the question we asked, does the Geder Erva make you holy? So one answer and approach to this is the way the Svasemis explains the continuation of the Pasuk, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. He says, Kedoshim Tiyu, you can find in a variety of sources, not just an imperative, but it's also a promise. A person is told, be Kadosh. We haven't got to the definition of Kadosh yet. He says, how am I, a human being, flesh and blood, going to be Kadosh? He says, you can. Ki Ani Hashem, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. The phrase, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, is a very powerful phrase. Hashem represents HaYehoveh V'Yeh, the infinite, the one who was, is, and will be. Elokeichem implies a very personal connection. Your personal God, the one who gives power to everything you are and everything you have. And the Svasemis points out, especially for a Jew, and this gets to the world of different souls, but the soul of a Jew is described by Chazal as Chedek Elokam Imal, as a portion of God. While it's true, he says that God gives life to all creation, the immediacy of that which gives you every strength that you have, right? The name Elohim represents Baal Kol HaKochos Kulam, the master of all powers. all powers that are in you come from the godliness that's in you. So therefore, Kedoshim to you is not telling you to go from 0 to 60. Kedoshim to you is telling you you have Kedusha inside of yourself, and you have to live in a way that enables you to access that Kedusha and for that Kedusha to come out. So this is starting to give us a little bit of a picture about how things that seem on the surface to be negative, just things that you're not doing, actually enable an incredibly powerful positive. And this is going to lead us to trying to define this concept of Kedusha. When we look at the word Kedusha and the way it applies in different places, you have to look for some place you can get a handle on it. One place is in the act that we call Kiddushin. Okay? Jewish marriage has two stages. The first stage is called Erusin or Kiddushin, and that is the part that we get with the ring. Okay, that's Jewish marriage is confusing. I once had a non-Jewish co-worker who said that they were invited to an Orthodox wedding, and they said they couldn't figure out how the marriage happened. Because they went into this hall, and the girl was sitting in a white dress on a big chair, they could get that, and people were eating, that made sense. And then suddenly lots of people came like singing into the room and jumping up and down, and the guy did something with the veil, and everybody went singing and jumping out, so she figured that's how Jews get married. But then they shuffled them over to another place. There was a wedding canopy. That looked familiar. And then, you know, the groom went up there. And then the bride started doing laps around the groom. And maybe she thought, maybe that's how Jews get married. And then a rabbi came up. And there was a ring. And everybody said, Mazel Tov. But then more rabbis came up and said more things and did more things, and they broke something and they started jumping up and down again. Someplace in there, marriage happened. I'm not exactly sure what did it. So, Baruch Hashem, we have a little bit better knowledge of the technicals of it. So the first stage, Kiddushin or Erusin, right, we commonly do by the giving of the ring before to Edim and declaring, Hareat Mekudesh Esli B'Tabas Zokadas Moshe V'Yisrael. And at that stage, they're not fully married. Right, we express this in the brachas, it's called the Birkas HaErusin, right, that Baruch Baruch was Asor Lanu as HaArusos, those that we are merely engaged to, halachic engagement, we're still not allowed to live to as man and wife. V'hiter Lanu as HaNesus Lanu Yidei Chupa V'Kiddushin, only those that we fully marry through the entire marriage process of completing Chupa and Kiddushin. So what happens at Kiddushin? What happens at Kiddushin is that woman is now forbidden to every other man on the planet aside from this one who she received that ring from. Right? It's Asar la akule alma kehegdish, the Gemara in Kiddushin says. He made her forbidden to everyone else in the world like hegdish, like an item which has been dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, can only be used by the Beis HaMikdash and cannot be used by anybody else in the world. That doesn't sound very happy to us, very... You know, usually engagement is something people get excited about. The girl holds up her finger with the ring. Everybody says, Mazel Tov. And somebody asks, what does that mean? It means I'm forbidden to everybody on the planet, right, aside from Shlomi Goldstein. And that's kind of a weird thing to be celebrating, right, which is there. What is it telling us, though? Just as in the case of Hekdesh, don't pay attention just to the separation. It's separation and dedication. The reason that engagement, Kiddushin, is happy is because a bond is now formed between this woman and this man that can only exist by her separation from every other man in the world. The two go simultaneously together. And so too with Hekdesh, something by being able to attain its definition of something which is part of what's going on in the Beis HaMikdash must be separate and inaccessible by everything else. So it's not separation for separation's sake. It's not separation because if you torture yourself by not doing things, that will make you holy. It's saying that there is an innate holiness that you're trying to access. And sometimes a process of separation is extremely necessary for the Kedusha to be accessed, for you to be able to connect to something. Rabbi Beryl Wine brought a very nice mushel for this. I heard a recording of a shir he gave many, many years ago. And he said something struck him once in his early work. He worked for the OU in kosher supervision. And one of the tasks he was assigned was one of the first runs of kosher wine in a non-kosher vineyard. Okay, when I was growing up, so kosher wine was made in nice little Jewish wineries. It came in three varieties, sweet, extra sweet, and really, really sweet. Right? There was one brand, Shapiro's Wine, from the Lower East Side. Their motto was, so thick you can cut it with a knife. That was viewed as a good thing. It kind of took its time to come out of the bottle. So then, you know, Jews decided they wanted to get fancy, you know, and they wanted to have the things and the shapelier bottles and names like Cabernet Sauvignon and Pinot Noir and stuff. So when you had to do that, they didn't really have the ability to do it. So what you would do is you would do a run of kosher wine in a regular vineyard. In order to do that, because of the halachas of Stam Yenom, so the mashgiach has to be sure that, at least to a certain stage of the processing, everything is done by Shomer Shabbos Jews. Now, in order to negotiate that, he had to deal with the wine taster. Okay, there was a wine taster, and he has to access the wine at different times in its production, and he has to take it and hold it up and sniff it and take a sip and different things, and he had to work out a dynamic with him so that the kosher status of the wine could remain while doing that. So he said, meanwhile, he got to know the wine taster a bit, and he was fascinated by this guy. You know, wine tasters have tremendous talent. They can tell you things about all sorts of things about the wine. And he asked him, did you, like, get a degree in college in this? And he said, but no, he says, I come from the little village in France. And he said, there, wine is very important. It's part of the culture. And when he was young, so his parents saw that he had an extremely good sense of taste and smell. He could walk into the house, take a sniff, tell his mother exactly what's in the pot that she's cooking. Right? He could sense everything. So they took him to be tested by some of the great wine tasters of the region. And they tested him, and he did well. And they said, you know, again, these guys, you can give them a sip, they'll tell you where the wine is from, what the weather was like that year, right? Things like that, all sorts of things. So they said, this boy can be a wine taster. He must, however, protect his palate. He must eat nothing very cold, no ice cream. He must not drink anything or eat anything very hot, no hot soup, no hot tea. He must not have anything very spicy. He said, and so it is. All my life, I eat lukewarm, right? Kind of bland food, right? Because I'm a wine taster. And he wasn't saying this with tears in his eyes, right, over this. He viewed it that he had a gift, he had a talent, and he separated from those things to let his talent flourish in order to be all that he could be. So Rabbi Wein said to me, that ticked off in my head as perhaps as an image of the Jewish concept of Kedusha. So many people look at Jews, and what sticks in their mind when you see a Torah observant Jew is, there is so much you people can't do. There's so much you can't do. And our world of Kedusha, our world of separation, is really so much that we can do. Let me tell you where I had to bump into this in kind of a sticky situation. At one point in life, many, many years ago, I was giving, one of the first shiurim I ever gave was to college students on a certain campus, and I wanted to pick something safe. So I picked Pirkei Avos. It's kind of safe, you know, who was happy with his lot, who was real wealthy and all these kind of things, you know, and stuff that people aren't going to get into arguments about. Somehow we bumped into the Mishnah, which says, "Ein lecha ben chorin elamisha osek b'Torah." There is no one as free as one who is involved in Torah. In polite company, I cannot tell you the reactions that got from the crowd, right? Because they said, you are, you know, I was probably one of the only Orthodox Jews they'd ever met. And they said, you're the most restricted person we ever met in our life. Right? You should just wear a t-shirt that says, I'm sorry, I can't do that, because that's like your answer to most anything anybody brings up in life. You know, that's you can't do it. So if you want to say you're more spiritual than other people, you want to say you're happier than other people, whatever you want to say, don't say more free, because it's simply not true. Other people can do whatever they want, and you can't. So Hashem put this strange idea in my head. Suddenly I had an image of something from high school biology, the amoeba. Everybody remember the amoeba? Okay, the amoeba is a single-celled creature made out of something that's called like ectoplasm or something, a fancy word for jelly. And it does not have rigid cell walls. It has flexible cell walls. And therefore, it's constantly changing its shape, right? The amoeba always moves simply by changing the shape and exuding what's called pseudopods, meaning parts of itself, some of the jelly oozes out one way or another. That's the way it eats. If there's a particle of amoeba food, it simply oozes out and engulfs it and it disappears, like food at a kiddush. That's kind of, you know, what happens. And that's what it does in life. Now, an amoeba is extremely free. An amoeba can be oval, an amoeba can be a circle, an amoeba can ooze under things and around things, as opposed to me, who are very restricted, because I have this rigid skeleton which is restricting me, right? The skeleton is held tight by tendons and ligaments, and if I want to change my shape, it involves painful dieting and exercise, and that's only a matter of millimeters. So the amoeba is much more free than I am. But let's look at it another way. I can dance, I can build, I can sing, I can climb, I can travel, I can do so many things that an amoeba can't do, only because I have that skeleton and those tendons and ligaments restricting me. Those give me strength. Those unleash my abilities. If you imagine me without those things, I'd just be a bag of squishy stuff, right? I wouldn't be able to do anything. In fact, let's even look at a minor case. How many times we heard on the news when you listen to the sports, so-and-so is sidelined for the season because he tore a ligament. Well, we think, wait a second, ligaments restrict you, right? He tore a ligament, so now he has more freedom of movement. That's true, the thing can move, but it can't do anything, right? If I had a friend who's a surgeon and said, you know, I always wanted to be able to turn my arm 360 degrees. Could you, like, you know, cut the ligaments there? He could do it, you know, and friends could, like, turn my arm around for amusement, but it wouldn't be able to do anything. So this is the idea of the restrictions in the Torah, the things the Torah tells us not to do. It's so fascinating. Chazal have the way they count those up, right? We have Shasa, 365 mitzvahs lo ta'aseh. And those correspond to the way Chazal divide up our anatomy to 365 gidin, ligaments, tendons that hold us tight. That's giving you a message. Don't view a tendon as something that keeps you in prison. Don't view a tendon as something that stops you from having fun. View a tendon as something that holds you together and gives you strength and enables you to tap into the potential that you have to do things. This is the idea of Kedoshim to you. Ki Kedosh Ani Hashem Elokechem. You have Kedusha inside of yourself. It's there, but in order to have it become active, you need strength of things that you don't do. There are things that you don't do, and those things are not just staying away from something, but keeping away from those things makes you strong, enables you to be all that you can be, the person that you're supposed to do. And this is why we're supposed to look in a positive way at those things the Torah tells us not to do. It's not an idea of self-torture. Let's take it a step deeper. There's a theme that the Shem Yishmuel mentions from his father many times, and I quote it often because it's so mind-blowing. So here in Parshas Kedoshim, he mentions it also. He said that his father asked on the question, he said, how is it, right, that a person is able to, through the mitzvahs that he does, transform what's called Olamos HaElyonim? Okay, there's an idea that the universe is made up of parallel worlds from the highest all the way down to the one that we exist in right now. And changes happen in this world from what's changed and transformed, and if you want to call it the source code in the highest worlds. Now remember, changes only happen there by what happens down in this world. This is the famous mashal the Nefesh HaChaim gives of the bell ringer's rope, right? That you have in every town there in Europe, you have a big bell on top of a tower, and to ring the bell, somebody pulls on the rope, and that pull travels all the way up the rope till it makes the bell swing and the sound goes out everywhere. So too, the things that we do in this, so to speak, lowest of worlds are those things that affect things in the source up there, and then the repercussions and reverberations are heard everywhere. And perhaps a more almost down-to-earth explanation, they say a certain chassid wanted to show his Rebbe his newest high-tech sukkah, where he had a cover for the sukkah so that if it rained, he could turn a crank and the cover would cover the sukkah, and when the rain was over, he could turn the crank and it would open up. And he said, I like that, because that's what Jews are all about. He says, we crank down here and we move things up there. That's us. That's what a Jew is. But the Shem Shmuel's father, the Avnei Nezer of Sochetchov, the son-in-law of the Kotzker Rebbe, he said, but how do I do that? I don't even know where those things are. You're telling me I transform the higher worlds? How can I do that? I'm just a little flesh and blood person in this world. How can I do those things? So he says we have to remember a certain halachic principle. That principle is called Shlucho Shel Adam Kamos. A person's messenger is like the person who sends the messenger. Right? It's almost like sometimes nowadays what they call power of attorney. There are a variety of different places you can find this in halacha. One of the famous ones, going back to Kiddushin. Again, don't try this at home because Chazal speak very strongly against doing this. But if you happen to be a little apprehensive about the dating process and you have a friend who's more with it socially, say, listen, I don't really know how to get married. Could you just go find me a good one and be Mekadesh? So he heads out into town. Right? He sees a promising young lady. Says, hi, no, not for me, actually. Right? This is for a friend of mine. Here's a little resume describing him. Here's his picture. He's a very nice guy. Would you like to become engaged to him? So she says, okay. So you call over two witnesses, and you say, Hareat Mekudeshes to my friend Shlomi, betabazu kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. And she becomes Mekudeshes to him as if Shlomi, the one who sent him out, did it. Because the messenger is like the one who sends. So he says, who made us messengers, so to speak? Who gave us the mission to do mitzvahs? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We say, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvoso v'tzivonu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mekadesh us, meaning imbuing us with divine powers, with his mitzvahs, when he commanded us to do those. Therefore, when I put on tefillin, I'm not just a guy tying myself up with straps. When I shake a lulav, I'm just not somebody waving around vegetables. I have been imbued with divine powers, and those actions then transform the universe. Okay, he says, that's really cool in terms of the mitzvahs aseh, the positive ones, but what about mitzvahs lo taseh? How do you change the universe when you don't do something? So he says, you're right. He says, if your only intention in not doing something is, I don't want to get in trouble, I don't want to get it punished, so then you're not doing something. It's true, you haven't damaged yourself by not doing that, but it hasn't brought about a huge positive change in the universe. But you have to realize that all our don'ts are connected to a very powerful do. He doesn't mention the one Kedoshim to you. He mentions another mitzvah, which is called Ubo Sidbok. You should connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That godliness that is in you has to connect to its source, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If when you're approaching something that the Torah tells you not to do, you say, I am not going to do that, because I'm commanded and made a shliach by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to connect to him, and these things would interfere with my connection. Suddenly that's imbued with that power as well, with that divine power of being sent by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so here we've learned how positive and wonderful all the mitzvahs lo taaseh are, and even what the Ramban says in terms of kadosh atzmecha b'mutar loch, the idea of separating from something, not just for the sake of separating, to show how tough you are, that I cannot eat this even though it's allowed, or I cannot do this even though it's allowed, but if that's something that can interfere, that can hold you back from connecting to Hashem, to doing what you do, so that's something which is very positive. So, but what are we supposed to do? How do we express Kedoshim to you and what we do? Is our whole focus in life trying to see how much we cannot do? Absolutely not. What Kedoshim to you implies to us, in the same way as the idea of marriage, is the idea of Kiddushin in marriage doesn't mean to be a monk and not get married. It means to get married to someone specifically in a specifically Torah framework. So too, here it talks about purposeful use of what we do in the world. Purposeful use. Because Kiddushin implies something that's dedicated to a purpose. And that means when we approach something, we have in mind that it's supposed to get us someplace, that it's supposed to be there. And that encourages the use, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu put these things in the world to be used. He gave us all sorts of wonderful tools to be who we're supposed to be, as long as you're using discretion with what and when and how you use them. It's a fascinating quote based on a story. Talmud Rebbe said this, he found it in the writings of someone whose name was Rav Aaron Volkin. Rav Aaron Volkin was a Rav in Lithuania, right? His grandson, I think it is of the same name, lives here in Beit Vegan, the Mashgiach in the Teres, what's the name of the yeshiva? Rav Baruch Mordechai Zrachi's yeshiva. Right? So he wrote in his writings the following. He said when he was in Europe, so he had heard as a young man that there was an old man someplace who had seen the Vilna Gaon. So back then, when men were men, if you were a yeshiva student and you heard that there was a person living on this earth who had seen the Vilna Gaon, you had to go see this guy. So he went to see him, he found a very old man, and he said, "You saw the Vilna Gaon?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Did you learn anything from the Vilna Gaon?" He said, "Yes." He says, "Could you share it with me?" He said, "Yes, but I want to give an introduction. It's not like I was a student of the Vilna Gaon." He said, "This was the only time I saw the Vilna Gaon. He was fairly closed up in Vilna, right? We all knew of him. We all revered him, his reputation." He said, "My family, we davened in a certain shul, and it happened to be one day the Vilna Gaon came into our shul for mincha. And between mincha and Maariv, I don't know if it was Shabbos or a weekday, we would learn a little bit of Pirkei Avos. So the Vilna Gaon was there. We asked him, 'Could you please teach the Pirkei Avos?' He said, 'Fine, where are you at?' So we were in the middle of the Memches Kinyanim, right, in that last sixth parak, the Brises, the 48 ways to acquire Torah. And he asked the following question. A variety of those Kinyanim are listed in the terms of minimizing. Miut Shena, minimizing sleep. Miut Sicha, minimizing talking. Miut Tainuk, minimizing pleasures. He said, the title here refers to these things as Kinyanim. Okay, a Kinyan is a halachic construct to acquire something. Now, part of the rules in a Kinyan is a Kinyan has to be done through a positive action. Let's go back to the world of Kiddushin. Okay, in the world of Kiddushin, there are a variety of creative ways that you can do your wedding ceremony, right? Be sure everybody's on board before you try. You don't have to give a ring, right? You could give any object worth a pruta, like a rare bird, or you could tell her a joke that's worth a pruta, funny, right? You could dance a dance that gives her a pruta's worth of pleasure. There are a variety of things you can do, but you cannot hold up your fist and say, "Is it worth a pruta for you for me not to punch you in the nose?" And she says, "Yes." Well, hareat mekudeshesli, with the fact that I'm not punching you in the nose, right? Kedas Moshe Yisrael, that doesn't work because it's something you're not doing. It's not something that you are doing. So he says, so how can the Mishnah tell us we're koneh Torah by things we're not doing? That doesn't make sense. It's not a kinyan. So he said, what it's telling you is sometimes you need to sleep a little in order to be koneh Torah. Right? You're fighting the fight. You didn't sleep enough last night. Your head's bobbing up and down. So now, after you eat your lunch, you go, you lie down for a half hour, you tell your roommate to wake you up. A little sleep to be koneh. Miut sicha. Sometimes you got to talk with a friend. Miut tainuk. Sometimes you need a little bit of pleasure to get yourself energized and zoned in, like the Mesillas Yesharim said, the pleasures of this world are created to give a person yishuv hadas, right? To give you, it settles your mind. And to give you some nachas ruach, a dose of pleasure brings up your mood. Our body and soul are connected. So it's an idea of justifiable use, purposeful use of the things that are there. It doesn't mean that we're trying to look at everything that's out there as bad and that really we would want to be disembodied spirits, but we're stuck here, so we're going to try to live in this world as minimally as possible. No, we view the things in the world as a gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives just. Like so many gifts, it has to be used in the right way. It has to be used justifiably. So that's the picture of what we're trying to do when we're here. When you come to yeshiva, it's not you're running away from life. Many people make that mistake. Once I was in a yeshiva here in Israel, and we were on a street that many tourists passed by, and once someone stuck their head and said, "Look, honey, it's Jewish monks." And I said, "No, we are not Jewish monks," right? The Rabbi Isaac Sher, the Mashgiach of Slobodka, said, we see the pasuk until mechubanim shimuli yiras Hashem alamedchem. David HaMelech says, "Go, my children." Right? Interestingly, he says the word "go." Many explanations on that. I will teach you yiras Hashem, fear of God. Right? That's the ultimate goal that everybody's looking for. And people jump from that to the pasuk about not saying lashon hara, netzar lashon chamera. But he says, but there's a pasuk in between. It says, "Mi ha'oyish ha'chavetz chaim," who is a person who desires life, "oyev yomim." He loves his days, liras tov. He says, a person who has yiras shamayim means, Hashem, you put me in a world, you gave me life. I love life. That means that's the whole potential for me to do everything I've created for. You've given me a day, I love days. Or if yomim, liras tov, because a day is a day in which I can do so much good. That's a yiras shamayim. That's a person who acknowledges the fact that I've been given all these things and I want to use them for the good. Therefore, his corollary is, he says, a person doesn't go to yeshiva to run away from life. A person comes to yeshiva to learn how to live. To have his value system set, to have his goals set, to know what he's trying to achieve, And then that Kedusha will express itself in the things that you do, in the things that you don't do, or in the things that you do some of, but perhaps not too much of. Kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokecha.